There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. Flying solo this week as Tricia McCrone is on Flathead Lake in Montana, which is so nice we should make it a state. I write the Cats Report in the Las Vegas Sun, and I also write for Greenspun Media Group, all those titles, including The Sunday, and I write for Vegas Magazine. That's my job when I'm not doing this radio show. Sitting across from me now are two improvisational comedians who are also involved in the podcast culture. They co-star in a show called The Bucket Show every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock at the Scullery at the Ogden in downtown Las Vegas. That's right across from El Cortez Hotel Casino. They also co-host the podcast Ice Cream Social, which I have appeared on myself recently. That goes on twice a week. You can find it on their website. They'll talk about where to find that, and that is among many other projects they're involved with. And we'll talk about all this. Welcome to the show, Matt Donnelly and Paul Mattingly.
Oh, good to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Las Vegas, Matt and Mattingly.
Your co-host, the way you described how she is away, she's dead, right? You killed her or she's somehow...
You mean in fact or professionally?
Montana, giant quotes around like Montana. She's in Montana.
Like my dad used to take our dogs to exactly where you described.
There's like 12 dogs living in Montana now on a big farm.
Well, I can tell you this about Montana, no extradition. So she's in Montana.
Sure.
Until my attorney tells me otherwise. I laughed through that introduction because I remember when I was on your show, Matt was giving me a hard time about Cats of the Dish.
Cats of the Dish. I can't believe we're on.
I can't read that. I can't hear like Cats of the Dish. All I hear is Cats with the Dish.
Down, Fifi. Cats with the Dish, yeah. And so I kind of chucked my way through that. But it's great to have you guys on here. This is the first time I think I've done a home and home where I've been on somebody's show and then they've come in and have joined us.
Yeah, well, you came on our podcast and told some great stories. We already got a lot of great feedback and good numbers from that. So we appreciate you coming by.
Let's talk about where to find that exactly and when to find that show exactly.
Oh, sure. I mean, we haven't been funny enough for people to be curious yet, but let's go for it. We are at mattandmattingly.com.
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 Right. And that's where you find it. And you guys record twice a week. And you guys record out of the Inspire Theater.
Yeah, we go in the green room of the Inspire Theater down there. Nice little digs.
How did you get that gig, by the way? How did you get into that place? What's your relationship with those guys?
You know, we were very interested in the downtown scene in general.
Right.
You know, and we were part of the comedy scene, and a lot of it was happening at the Onyx Theater when we first moved here.
At the Commercial Center.
Yeah, And then that kind of closed up shop, and that whole kind of Commercial Center just keeps getting... no one cleans the parking lot. Let's just talk about it that way.
Literally, nobody cleans the parking lot.
No one comes over to that parking lot and changes a bulb. So we were really excited to move somewhere more exciting, and it seemed like the whole downtown scene was happening. And so as soon as we saw the Inspire Theater, we just kind of found a way in there. So we did a comedy showcase there.
Right.
And we also volunteered to help out with a couple of projects they were doing.
Yep.
And then in turn, we said, hey, could we kind of want like a more professional space than like our friend's bedroom to record a podcast. could we set up shop in here? And they said, go for it.
They've been very generous in helping us get some facility use. And it's been awesome to be able to go down there every Wednesday and perform in the Scullery. It's this really cool little speakeasy dive, small bar.
Absolutely.
And a little black box theater in the back. It's good times.
Seats about, what is that place seat? 50?
About 50 or 60, 60. Depending on how you set up. Depending on how many tables with candles you want to put in there.
If you take away some candles, you can fit one or two more people, but that's
But
about
Paul
it.
Demands a ton of candles. His candle rider is insane.
Well, it's what works.
A lot of pumpkin spice.
That's all.
He cannot be funny without
that odor
in the
air. Pumpkin spice.
Only pumpkin spice. That's why I'm funnier in the fall, because it's easier to get.
Funnier. The closer we are to Halloween, the funnier Paul is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Like a waxing and waning moon.
What is the format of the Bucket Show exactly?
It varies. We often do short form. Kind of the idea that we first started with was doing lots of short form games, which are kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway style.
Right.
So what we thought was it'd be fun to do games that require usually five or six people just doing it with two people. That was kind of the challenge we had set for ourselves. So we've done a couple of nights with those, and then we sometimes just dip back into long form as well.
So what's a game? What's an example of a game?
Oh, so like we'll do like new choice, right? So like if we'll just be doing a scene and someone else will call it new choice and we change the last thing we said
to whatever. It's in your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And we just randomly, it's to make the scene go off the rails. So it's whatever the most ridiculous choice is, then you leave them hanging with that choice and they have to make that choice truth.
And sometimes instead of an outside caller, we'll actually call it internally. So it gets even extra confusing. So it's the two of us playing the scene, making new choices, but also telling the other person to make a new choice on the fly.
And the other person has to know that the new choice is coming from the stage and has to be on his toes for that reason also.
Yeah.
I could also just do it to Paul at any time.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just you two in this bucket.
Just the two of us, right. Yes.
That's the whole idea. We actually thought of a much more kind of a, I guess like a little too hip of an idea where we wanted to actually call it our college improv troupe reunion. And then we would go on stage and be the only ones.
The only two that showed up.
The only two that showed up.
And that's hence playing games that usually require five or six people as just two people.
So there's a lot of discomfort right from the beginning.
Yeah, like we wanted to be right comfortable right off the bat. But then, you know, I used to roll with Wayne Brady and Jonathan. Uh-huh. And I went and saw their show over the Mirage again. I hadn't seen them since they were at the Venetian, whatever that was, 4 or 5 years ago.
Right, it was a while ago.
And I just saw them doing a two-person show that just kicked butt, and they just do those games from Who's Line, and I said to Paul, I was like, you know, we should just line up the games. You know, the hardest thing about doing the games, right, instead of doing long form, are you familiar with either, John?
Yeah.
So long form is like real fun. You just take a suggestion, you just make the whole thing up. It's all theater.
Much more theatrical.
Right? Mm-hmm. But downtown, we figured we kind of might have all kinds of different audiences, and the games are really easy to entertain with. For Paul and I, they're too easy. When you do them with a large group, you kind of have to fake how hard they are. You know, mm-hmm. you have to pretend mm-hmm. that speaking in the order of the alphabet is a very difficult challenge.
Yeah. Then you have the audience on your side. That's the idea to,
right. and
to
so,
get them involved in
Paul
in
and I thought,
success.
Well, why don't we do a show that's actually hard to do? You know, and so we really line up games that are really hard for us to do. And also sometimes we also just show up and we don't plan the show. We just plan the show as we go. And so I'll challenge him to a game or he'll challenge me to a game. And we just kind of have to go with the flow.
It's an hour long.
An hour yeah, long.
About an hour.
Mm-hmm. And you come in unprepared. I mean, yeah. Well, sometimes by design.
Improvisers, that's sort of part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, without any.
We wanted to stop faking the pretend the hard. We wanted to make it really hard for us. We've been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Why is it now? I've seen a lot of entertainment in Las Vegas. You know, I've seen all variety. And I've seen a lot of comedy, and I've long felt. You mentioned Wayne Brady, who I think might be the single best entertainer overall.
He's an insane entertainer, and that word.
Everything that he does is top notch. Mm-hmm. Everything, the singing, the dancing, the improv.
Well, that was it. When I was part of his show at the Venetian, like his half of his show was that improv set, and half of his show was this R&B set where he had these dancers, and he would dance with these hip hop dancers, and he would, you know, whatever age he is, he's throwing his, you know, feet over his head and posing in a standstill pose. He's singing these crazy, Sam Cooke songs and his own songs and Sammy Davis Jr. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he just did an hour of a Who's Line style show with just, you know, him and two other guys. And it was insane,
yeah.
You know, and it's his show. So he starts and ends every scene. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing was the warm up for that show. And I told him when he gave me the shot to do the shows with him that, like, I said, the warm up of the show is much harder than the show itself. He would just come in with a full band and then the whole ticketing crew would all hang out. So you'd have a crowd of like 20 people.
Wow.
And then Wayne would just run through freestyle rap scenarios with you. And I'd have to sit there and rap verse for verse with Wayne Brady for like 20 minutes to a half hour before the show started.
Help make you great at what you do now.
That was so much harder than the show. That was so much harder. It was so much harder to rap with him than it was to improvise with him.
Yeah, and to the point I was making in a roundabout way, this version, this form of entertainment seems to me to be the riskiest. There's more risk involved in improvisation than there is in any other form because there's nothing to lean on. You have no material. Stand-up comedy is risky anyway.
Yeah.
It just feels like if it doesn't work, and I've seen it not work, not in your hands, but I've seen it not work. It's very uncomfortable and not only not funny, but uncomfortable.
Well, this is the double-edged sword of improvisation. There is nothing better than really well-executed, good improvisational comedy. There is nothing worse than failed improvisational comedy, and that's just where it lands. It's either feast or famine. It's just that's how it is. And the great thing about playing with someone like Matt, we can count on, even if we have a dud scene, we're on to the next thing quickly and we're going to pick it up and roll and it's going to be fine. A big part of it is just the confidence and trusting that it's going to work out.
Yeah.
That's probably half of it, honestly.
Well, Paul and I have been at, like I said, experience. We've been at it for a while, and so like if a game is a dud, we actually don't we we make fun of it, or right. fun of ourselves for doing
right,
it.
Right, right. I've seen you do this, too. Yeah. So like, if we one or two's really, going, nowhere.
One or two gags tank. It's like, oh well, that was terrible. Ha ha ha. Here we go. On to
anyways,
the next.
So let's do something stronger.
We're not going to pretend it's working.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we'll take a right and just do a stronger game.
Yeah,
I got to do this. We're going to take a quick break here, guys. We're going to have Josh Bell, our regular movie critic, talk about the recent releases for another 3 minutes, and then we're going to come back with Matt Donnelly and Paul Mattingly. So stick around. Viva Las Vegas! Viva! Viva Las
Vegas! Yeah! You see, in Brooklyn, money changes hands all night long. It's not the kind that you can deposit in a bank. But all that money, it needs to end up somewhere. They call it a drop ball.
That's Tom Hardy, who gives one of the best performances of the year as Brooklyn bartender Bob in the crime thriller The Drop. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. Written by author Dennis Lehane, whose novels were the sources for Mystic River and Gone Baby Gone, The Drop is initially a fairly low-key story about Bob and his cousin Marv, played by the late James Gandolfini, finding themselves in debt to the Chechen mob. But it builds steadily over time, with Hardy revealing surprising layers to the seemingly mild-mannered Bob all the way up until the end. I give The Drop 3.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is the family drama Dolphin Tale 2, inspired by another true story from Florida's Clearwater Marine Aquarium.
When that truck arrives, you will hear one voice, and it will be mine. Does everyone have their assignments? Okay, I'm gonna need a stretcher team. Phoebe, I want you at the head with me. I'm gonna need some strong backs.
There's one right here.
Great, get on up here. Sawyer, I want you right beside me.
Unlike the first Dolphin Tale, this sequel lacks the strong hook of the injured dolphin Winter getting a prosthetic tail. Based on more true events, the sequel features requisite arcs for the fictional human characters and some cute dolphin antics, but it mostly just goes through the family film motions. I give Dolphin Tale 2 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
There's 1,000 pretty women living out there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Welcome back. Sitting with me now are two improvisational comedians who are podcasters and have various projects in town, Matt Donnelly and Paul Mattingly. Matt and Mattingly, is their handle, and they have the podcast Ice Cream Social on their website. We're talking about some improvisational techniques in comedy. One thing I'm interested in is a story about when something maybe really went haywire with you guys on stage. Has there ever been a time when you couldn't get out of something, when you were just so mired in a bad premise or bad execution, where you couldn't talk your way out of it?
I've brought a mentally unstable person with a lightsaber up on stage. That was hard to get
out
of.
In other words, a person with a lightsaber.
That's pretty tough.
That was pretty tough. Well, it was. This is back in New York. Actually, I have two stories. One is in New York, and one is with Paul. I'll just tell the New York one quickly. I was at the People's Improv Theater in New York. Ali Faranakian, former SNL writer, owner and operator of the People's Improv Theater. That's where I kind of cut my teeth. And he talks about this concept called the greatest truth in the room. Right. Okay. And so, like, you know, when you're improvising, like
Whitney Houston song,
people talk. Yeah. I'm sorry. Whitney Houston was the guy who I talked to.
So Whitney Houston, from Divas Las Vegas.
Was like,
okay.
Greatest truth in the room.
The greatest.
Let's do some coke.
Truth.
And,
second greatest
in the room.
Let's do some.
We were the highest guys, as she told me.
Crack is whack. That's the greatest truth.
You've already got me. Okay, so, you know, what happens is something's so distracting. Like, an example would be, like, another time, like, a water main broken, water start trickling through the theater. You can't ignore that and pretend that hasn't happened. So we started doing a bunch of scenes incorporating the water.
Right.
Well, this guy comes in to the show that I'm doing late, and we're in the middle of doing long form. So we're not stopping and starting, like, short form. We're just doing one fluid piece. And all of a sudden, there's just a big, like, whoom, a big, like, lightsaber light wave on the side of the theater, and everyone's eyes just dart towards it. So I'm not in the scene. I march right towards the guy, and I want to bring that into our piece. I want to bring that into the theater that we're doing, so that the audience isn't distracted, that we can handle this. So I say, "Give me the lightsaber." And quietly say, "Give me the lightsaber." And he goes, "You want me to go on stage with a lightsaber?" And I just go, yeah, let's go. Let's go. And so I edit the scene that's happening, and I bring the guy on with a lightsaber. And he is manic, and he is like sweating, and he is trying to talk. And actually, I guess he had taken a few improv classes, which I was hoping he would just feel weird or bad and then want to sit down and maybe leave the lightsaber or just at least turn it off. But instead, he just stays on stage and keeps trying to improvise, but like not listening. So he just is making up his kind of constant monologue.
Well, why would he have to listen? He can just Jedi mind trick you to say whatever he wants you to say.
Yeah, I guess so. And that's why we had no control. I didn't realize I was getting Jedi mind tricked.
You got your midichlorians all jacked by that dude.
Jedi
all
these mind years, trick is applicable in this situation.
All these years, I was thinking this was my fault. And thank you. Now I realize it was not
okay.
my fault at all.
It's okay.
We were doing a show when I first moved here at Bonkers. We were over at the Bonkers Comedy Club at the Palace Station Casino.
Oh, I remember that
and
place.
And Paul and I are doing the dating game with a larger group. And I'm having what I would call a bad fat guy moment, right, where the chair I'm sitting in is about to fall apart beneath me. And so, again, this is going to happen. And greatest truth in the room is everyone's just going to be thinking, like, they're not going to be thinking that guy is in character breaking that chair. They're going to think, poor fat actor is breaking a chair up there. I no longer care about dating him.
He's going to have to work through the reality of breaking a chair.
Did it break a fall apart?
Yeah, well, that's it. So I decided to do. The first rule of improv is yes and, right? So I'm going to yes and it. I'm not going to just let this chair kind of creak to a break. I'm going to destroy it. And so I spent the whole dating game not answering questions and just tearing this chair into pieces beneath me until I was just sitting in like a little nest.
You're just shifting around and moving.
Yeah, no, I was just literally at the end, I was sitting in like a nest of broken pieces of metal.
Yeah.
Arnie's got a big kick out of it, and it was not a good dating game.
The trickiest part I ever had, we were on a boat doing a Second City gig, and I don't know, you're familiar, you remember the Second City Reviews out here when we had them at the Flamingo.
Yep.
Lots of our shows would start with a couple of blackout scenes, quick lights up, lights down, boom, 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 three or four, you know, very short joke, you know, in and out, 25 second tops. Okay. So we had one of our blackouts in our running order for this one show involved a proposal, a wedding proposal was the gag, right? And turns out a couple of our cast members were actually fiance or boyfriend and girlfriend at the time and wanting to go into the fiance mode, and the boyfriend wanted to propose. This is at the very top of the show, and he wants to turn a blackout gag into a proposal moment.
Will you listen to how cold Paul's heart is right now? I mean, he could be describing something that I would view as beautiful, and now listen to him.
Well,
not in this context.
It's just you know, we're trying to get the audience on board to start. This is like the second or third thing we've done, period, right? And we're going to have an hour to go after this. And so not only are we going to kill the gag, it's not going to be funny anymore because it's going to become a wedding proposal, but this guy is going to basically throw his girlfriend into a tizzy for the rest of the entire show, you know, after, anyway, so they went ahead and did it, and that's what happened, and the show was kind of just meatballs after that point. We got it back on track about 20 minutes in, but
no one cares about fake theater once real theater happens.
That was just it.
A wedding proposal is such a
real proposal
thing.
Trumps all these.
But the problem was, as Trumpy as that would be, nobody knew it wasn't part of the show. You know what I mean? Okay. It was so early in the show, the audience wasn't in on the gag.
This would be like actually murdering someone in a murder mystery.
Right.
Like, no one would call the cops.
Yeah. It's that scene from Interview with a Vampire.
So they're
and
kind
it's
of
like, what happened? Did a lady actually die?
They're
I don't
kind
know.
Of waiting for the next.
Right. So what?
Scene
yeah, they're waiting
that,
for
right?
the next beat. Yeah. And it just went on to the next
pregnant,
thing.
But come back, they'll do a home.
And like I said, she just kind of discombobulated for the next couple of minutes, and we finally got it back on track. But it was just...
What a nightmare.
It was just funny, because I told him, I said, well, you can do this, but she's going to be crying and ridiculous.
I was going to say, even for the engaged people, like to say, like, I will marry you, but now I got to play a bunch of different characters for the next 45 minutes before I can actually celebrate my engagement.
The engagement is off to a very
Are they still together?
I'm pretty sure they are. They were made for
I would have lost that bet. I would have lost that bet.
I don't know 100%. I'll know soon. My buddy is coming into town. He'll be able to tell me.
What is the most awkward experience you've seen in comedy, John?
Remember Richard Jenny?
Mm-hmm.
He was performing at the theater that they built for Rita Rudner.
Yeah.
At New York, New York. And I never saw after this either any of Richard's act, but I was in there and a person in the front row of the show fell asleep and he didn't take it very well. He took it really poorly.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that he wasn't funny about it.
Oh. No, he was very angry about it.
Yeah.
That's a very
which
funny,
was not funny.
No, that no. That's a very yeah. funny thing about intention, you know? Mm-hmm. And I talk about this as I taught, you know, Paul and I both teach improv as well. And teaching intention is a huge part of what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was talking about like something that could be offensive now. Frank Sinatra used to carry out Sammy Davis Jr. at the mm-hmm. beginning of the Rat Pack shows, hold them up and say, I'd like to accept this award on behalf
famous.
Of the NAACP.
Mm-hmm. Famous
Very
joke.
Famous mm-hmm. move. And when you see yeah. that now, it can make you uncomfortable if you see it. At the time, you know, they weren't letting Sammy Davis Jr. walk through the front of these hotels. And, you know, they were treating him mm-hmm. like a second-class citizen because he was black. And there's Frank Sinatra saying at the top of the show, this is my man. Here's uh-huh. what I'm doing. Uh-huh. And so at the time, it felt great. You know, but intention means so much to comedy.
Well, it is. That's an an unsettling thing to me when I think of that, because I remember the I think it was a TV movie that Don Cheadle played the role of Sammy Davis in.
Yeah,
and there was a moment in that movie that they had discussed. I remember because I interviewed Don Cheadle about this particular moment where he turns away. They're joking about him in that way. That's yeah. not that particular joke, but they're making fun of his ethnicity mm-hmm. on stage, Dean and Frank. Mm-hmm. And he is about to go out, and they're joking. He turns away from the camera and he grimaces. He turns away from the stage and grimaces to himself, like it mm-hmm. hurt.
Yeah. Oh,
and then okay. he walks back out, and he said there was a lot of discussion with the estates and the people who were around at that time whether that scene should have remained,
right,
because yeah. it might not have been so funny to him at that time. And then yeah. it's not funny to you if it's not okay with the right. the subject, right?
Yeah, and who knows at the time. It could change night to night, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
I
sure.
mean, mm-hmm. Paul and I with each other as a duo, you walk that line where you bust each other's balls on stage, and sometimes you want to laugh at it. Sometimes you actually are authentically like, oh, shoot, did I really come off like
well, is
that?
Well, is there a border? Is there a line you won't cross? Like if somebody has something going on in their personal life, that you know that you're aware of is that
I Paul think has no personal life.
That's
really
part of it. That helps.
That's over the line.
That makes him safe. So I think it's exactly what Matt said. It's intention. We know that when we do a show, we are desperately trying to offend each other.
New choice.
What I start off my show with is just slapping Matt right in the face until blood comes out of something.
And I want a safety word. He won't give me it.
Well, this is time for our next contract negotiation.
Save that for the contract.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Paul and I have yet to cross a line with each other, but I'm sure there is one, you know.
Or even in
but in the middle of a
anyway.
Show, in the middle of a show, it'd be for me personally, you couldn't say or do something to me theatrically in the middle of a show that would throw me. Unless you stood up and said, the show's done. Paul, you're an absolute fool and a fraud. We're Maybe I'd be like, oh, okay, all right. That might throw me
out.
For a moment. But
yeah, I think as long as you're always putting the show first or comedy first, I think you would swallow anything else that comes
out. Right.
Well, you said you teach improv, which is something I was going to ask you about anyway. How do you – I mean, this seems something that's inherent.
Yeah.
Improv, the ability to do this and on many levels. How do you teach? Can you teach somebody who's not naturally – you know, who doesn't naturally have a predisposition
to
act
answers.
This way?
Yeah.
Okay, so my answer that I give to my students every time is, I cannot teach you how to be funny. I can teach you how to be honest. And you have to trust that the honesty will lead you to the humor. But okay. That's all I can do. So that's my approach.
I always say, like, do you think I walk on stage without knowing what I'm going to say? Yes. Do you think I walk on stage unprepared? No. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that idea that there can be preparation means that there's something to be taught. Improv exactly. is a way you co-accomplish. It's a way that it's an interactive discipline. Mm-hmm. It translates very well actually outside of comedy as well. And so we also, Paul and I will do corporate training and things like that, because I do things like teach people about customer service. I do mm-hmm. things like teach people about meeting techniques, you know, things like that. Like how do you foster good ideas? And it's all about, it's about co-accomplishing and co-supporting creativity.
Yeah, there's a lot of application in improvisational comedy that right. can stray into the business yep. environment, like with job interviews.
Now getting to what
dealing with your boss, you know, any of that. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And mm-hmm. Dating, trying to talk to someone for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, all that stuff. It really, mm-hmm. it goes across the board.
I'm going to try and date without my script for a while.
Oh, I don't know. That script is tight.
Be
that
careful, man. Tight, don't man. Go off book for yet.
Yeah, like if you're,
hold on to that.
If you're not using that script, can I borrow it? Because really? It is a
hello,
good dating script.
Christine. I love your blank hair.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. This, you're so there. Good at it. Wow. You're so good at
it's
it.
It's like seamless. At the go I also, carry it off very well.
You know, I always said like, you know, like, everyone thinks they can be a little bit funny. Everyone has been a little bit funny. So there's no such mm-hmm. thing as, like, in terms of the absolute zero talent, it doesn't really exist.
Everybody has some humor.
Right. Mm-hmm. It really is about having mm-hmm. some, not perfect, but some self-perception. If you go on stage and you stink and you think you stunk, then we can work with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Some self-awareness. Okay. And I'd go so far as to say the real key for me is vulnerability.
Yeah.
Being able to tap into a place where you can expose something of your true humanity, and that goes back to honesty again, mm-hmm. Because that's all people really want to see. We think we come into a comedy show wanting to see jokes, but it's like any other theatrical experience. We want to see the human condition exposed. That's mm-hmm. all we want to see. And those moments only occur when performers let themselves be a little bit naked on stage.
A right. big
emotionally point, or however.
When I am teaching a fun kind of little litmus test, I'll give the class. I'll say, like, if you're sitting in a diner, right, and the table to the left of you, there's a guy getting caught cheating on his girlfriend, and they're kind of exposing the details of it. And to your right, there's a guy talking to someone from a government agency, and they're trying to figure out how to create like 10,000 jobs in a hurricane recovery. Which conversation do you think you're going to eavesdrop on? Which one do you think you're going to listen in on? And I always say, like, uh-huh. if you listen in on the job creation conversation, you're going to have a tough time doing improv.
Mm-hmm.
But if mm-hmm. your natural inclination is to listen to the guilty pleasure details of human beings, like that, if you know how to listen with those ears, that's the ears you listen to when you create on stage. Like, you create with those same ears.
Right.
You have to listen with the same curiosity and intention, and you're going for that guilty pleasure of the vulnerable human being.
And when you guys are on stage, you're not in character necessarily, you are just you're behaving as yourselves in unusual premises. Is that the best way
yeah,
to describe
I would
it?
Actually say that the best way to describe my technique. I think one mm-hmm. of the reasons why I love working with Paul is he and I have come from very different comedic backgrounds and have very different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to just play different flawed versions of myself and different status versions of myself in situations. And I try to play whatever occupation or whatever in a believable way or whatever age in a believable way. But I pretty much am just shades of me. Yeah. Whereas Paul is like right out of Second City and almost Groundlings, even though he's never taken Groundlings.
I did. I took a first course with Groundlings before I had to run away from L.A. But yeah, I'm much more into characters. And I find that was the case. When I even started trying to stand up, I was much happier and much more successful being a character. So I hide a bit
okay.
on stage. It's still, there's still a little bit of me in that character.
You've been in like shows where you've played characters. Tony and Tina's.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. In Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely. Yep. So, and I feel much more comfortable playing a character role and doing a voice or something.
A Star Trek The Experience. You played a
yeah, I mean, I was
we have talked about this.
I did have an alter ego for 9 years.
He played the same guy for 9 years.
A Klingon,
him,
yeah.
So
Lieutenant
he's
Commander
the
Bohal.
Same Klingon
yeah.
for 9 years.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
There's not a lot of yeah. variety in the Klingon yeah. personality, is there?
Not as much as you'd think, but there's some, you know. That was kind of my answer.
There are Ferengi people and there are Klingon people.
That's right.
And you're Klingon people.
Paul has this funny story where, like, you know, Klingons aren't allowed. I don't know Star Trek is that well, but I guess Klingons aren't allowed to feel like emotion, or they're not.
No, Klingons can't cry because they don't have tear ducts.
Oh, they don't have tear ducts, right? So yeah. People would do Star Trek weddings, and Paul as a human being would be a little emotional watching these weddings, but he would be like, oh shoot, I can't cry because Klingons don't have tear ducts. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. he wouldn't cry.
Should have ordered a Ferengi.
Yeah, yeah. But that was one of my lines at the wedding.
That was a beautiful ceremony, humans. Had I tear ducts, I would be weeping.
That kind of thing.
Oh,
so,
my God. That's right. Well, if it ever happens for me, I'm going to call you.
All right. I'll let you know.
All right. That's the end of our trek, as it were, guys. We have the Scullery Show is Wednesdays at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Bucket Show.
The Bucket Show. It's pay what you want, by the way. It's free if you want it to be
right.
free. If you want to throw a little mm-hmm. coin in the bucket at the end, it's basically panhandling indoors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we have Ice Cream Social. That is
that's free too.
Yeah, it's free too. Free to download at mattandmally.com. You can get on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcast format. We even went on Microsoft to make it available to Zune people. This is how dedicated we are as podcast people. Just to get 8 more downloads a
That's
week,
right. yep.
we did this.
We'll do
get
it.
Another dozen.
But we release new episodes every Wednesday and Thursday.
Wednesday and Thursday. And you also co-host Penn's Sunday School, Penn School, which we didn't talk about, but Penn Jillette's podcast, which has been going on for about 2.5 years now.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
And it's great. We'll do this again, and I'll be back with you whenever you want on your
show.
Oh,
man. Cool. Yeah. And yeah. for anyone listening to this show, like, go ahead and check out Johnny Katz's episode on mattandmally.com. He just is filled with great stories. Even when I just turned it around on you, I turned it around on you once, and I said, like, what's your worst comedy experience? Boom, you had a good story. This is Johnny's just filled. I know, Johnny, you're more just than one. You should bring us back just to interview you again.
Mm-hmm. Wow, whatever works.
And Katz with a dish.
Katz with a dish on his own dish.
Dish. We need you back soon. Thanks for coming down, guys. Viva Las Vegas.